I think this is the other element that people aren't considering. He needs to put pressure on the A-listers, on the guys who are in Europe, that your position may not be safe. It may not be safe. So when I do call you in the next window or whenever, you better give me everything you got because there's no entitlement here. That's the other plus side to it. Versus if we had just called the A guys the entire time since Mauricio took over, the entitlement would be through the roof. All of them would be comfortable. All of them would know that their place on the World Cup team is secured. And that is not good, Benny. That is not good for your competitive fire. And that means a lot in tournament play. A lot in tournament play to get results is passion-oriented and energy-oriented and mentality-oriented. It's not necessarily the talent that you've got. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today, I've got two topics for you. Number one is about Mauricio Pochettino. How is Poch actually doing here with the U.S. men's national team? It is very important whether you are a coach or a parent or a media member or a fan that you educate yourself and learn as much as possible with respect to what's happening at the top level. And that means the senior men's national team number one, MLS number two, USL number three, so on and so forth. Even the youth national teams are important. You need to know what ecosystem you live in. You need to know what the narratives being crafted, what agendas are being pushed. All of that stuff is critical for you to be able to coach properly, navigate the coaching hierarchy, be a good mentor and guide for your kids, so on and so forth. Write good articles, have good podcasts, be a great journalist. All of this stuff matters. So make sure that you're dialed in for this one. And the second topic is about, if you're a coach, how do you move up the hierarchy? How do you get promoted? How do you get to the higher levels? Because I got an audience member question from that one, and I wanted to rip into it. I'm going to keep the ads really brief today. If you're a coach, you go to 343coaching.com. There are both free and premium programs for you there. They are top class, top of the line. You cannot get this stuff anywhere else. It is based on the pioneering work of Brian Kleiben here in the American soccer landscape. 20 years of experience, revolutionary work, shifted the whole ecosystem. You don't want to miss it. 343coaching.com is where you go. And the same applies for you parents who want to guide and mentor your kids as best as possible. But for you, you go to 343masterclass.com. That is where we have codified our decades worth of experience and seen countless cycles of youth players from U9 to U19, up to and including roughly a decade's worth of work at the professional level. So we've seen it all. We know what works. We know what doesn't work. 343masterclass.com is where you want to be. And if you're coaching 7 versus 7, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, Benny joins me in this one and extracts a lot of passion from me. You don't want to miss it. Here we go.
And I know you watched the game yesterday. Pochettino's back, bro. That's the narrative. Everybody that was saying Pochettino doesn't know what he's doing. He starts the wrong guys. Let's fire him before the World Cup. Now all of a sudden they beat Japan 2-0 and the narrative has shifted. So what have you seen? If anything, on X, on Twitter, Instagram, have you seen the same people that were calling him out change their minds, Gary?
It's so sad and silly, Ben. We've been talking about this forever here at 343 and between us, obviously, as well, that the fan base here really just, you know, goes with the results. You know, whatever the result says, the analysis is molded to fit the result. If we lose, then the analysis is always, we're shocking, we're terrible, the ship is burning, you know, we're going down like the Titanic. I have rarely ever seen, quote unquote, analysis from the American MLS USMNT fan base where we lose a game and people are encouraged, right? And they're like, wow, we lost a game, but damn, we look freaking good out there, you know, or we accomplished certain goals, or we were able to identify, you know, who is good, who is not, like all that, like positive, you know, nothing is positive when we lose. And no, folks might get this reaction where it's like, well, Gary, that's how it is everywhere across the world. That's not true. In Argentina, for instance, we might lose a game and the fan base there is sophisticated enough where many of them will say, yeah, we lost, but we were better. We outpossessed. We attacked more. We should have won 5-0, but it's just the way soccer goes. Just because you are better or you have amazing performance, you don't always win. I have never seen that analysis here. And then when we win games, I also don't really see very often where it's like the team is shocking, everybody sucks, fire the manager. That doesn't happen. But overseas, that does happen. You'll win a game and you will see analysis. I'm not saying the majority all the time, but you will see analysis where it's like, we're terrible, burn the whole fucking house down. And even though they won. So that's no different here than we lost to Korea. We're on the Titanic. We beat Japan. Nobody's saying Pochettino's amazing or great, but people are shutting the F up about we're on the Titanic and they're saying great things all of a sudden.
Oh, I just saw an ex-post, Gary. I think the guy's name is like Captain Pulisic. And he's like, 2026 is ours again. We're back. I'm like, oh man, this guy's
some
wild.
Of it, but no, some of it might be sarcastic, obviously.
I don't think so. I think this guy is legit. Like, just has no idea. But Gary, for example, Argentina just lost yesterday, right? They just lost to Ecuador. Obviously, on your feed, you probably get more Argentine stuff. So, is that the narrative? Like, it was a decent game. There's good stuff to take out of it, or are people also slandering the national team in Argentina?
Well, I must say I wasn't able to watch the game. And also for the U.S., I was really only able to capture the tail end of the first half. And then I watched the second half. I couldn't watch the first 25, 30 minutes. With respect to Argentina, I haven't caught the headlines at all. But I'm just going off of history because playing Ecuador in Ecuador, extremely difficult. The expectation actually isn't necessarily to win. Obviously, it's like we want to win. We're Argentina. Wherever we show up, we want to win. But if you lose that game or draw that game, nobody really bats an eye because Ecuador is legit, especially at home. Same with Bolivia. Bolivia just beat Brazil 1-0 in Bolivia. And I am catching a few headlines here about that shouldn't be happening, that Ancelotti should be calling up Neymar, that Ancelotti is picking the wrong players, you know, kind of a similar sort of thing. And I haven't posted this on X yet, but I kind of said it before. If Ancelotti were the USMNT coach or Pep or Mourinho or Klopp or insert any name that you want, world-class name, if they were the USMNT coach, they would be saying they're idiots too, that they don't know the American player, that they don't know the American culture, all that sort of stuff. So I don't know, Ben, it is what it is.
Yeah. To me, Gary, I feel like it might have been better to actually lose this game. I know some people are going to say, like, what the fuck? What are you talking about, Benny? You want to win every game? But, okay, now you have, for example, everybody's going to say, oh, Zendejas scored a golazo yesterday. He should be at the World Cup. Max Arfston, this phenomenal ball. He should be at the World Cup, right? Who did you say on your tweet? Freeman, World Cup. Let's get him there. And so winning this game, it's, I don't know, bro. It seems to me that now the narrative is, oh, look, these are MLS guys. We beat Japan, who a lot of people would say is better than Korea. These are the guys that should be at the World Cup. You know, so I don't know. I think it might have been better that we lost yesterday. You agree or no?
I don't know, because I just don't know how I want this Pochettino tenure to play out. We've said it when he got hired, Benny, on this show, that U.S. soccer basically put the MLS, MLS controls it, put themselves in a win-win situation, because if Pochettino is successful, then it silences all the critics of the establishment. And they'll tell everybody to shut the F up because we know what we're doing. Look, we got to a quarterfinal or a semifinal and we hired Pochettino. It's because we hired this guy and we did the identification and our development strategy with MLS, with MLS academies and MLS Next and no promotion relegation. It's all working, guys. That's if Pochettino's successful. So they have that whole narrative. So I don't know if I want Pochettino to be successful. On the flip side, if Pochettino fails and falls on his face, they will blame the fans, all of us who went hardcore against the notion of hiring some other MLS corrupt yes man. Okay. And so MLS will take this as an opportunity to say, see, we hired the big bad foreigner. Look at what happened. He lost everything. He lost against Korea. He lost against Japan, right? We're going to fire him. And now we're going to get our little lapdog to come in and have the podium, the microphone, the most loud microphone in all of American soccer, which is the national team coach position. We'll hire Cherundolo. We'll hire Steve Curtin. We'll hire the high school history teacher, which, you know, the guy that is the coach of Seattle Sounders, I think he's like a history teacher, psychology teacher. You get what I'm saying. He's not literally speaking, but that is not a football coach, all right, to come in and run the show. And then that coach will use the mic and say, MLS is the greatest. It's the best thing ever. All the players should sign here. I'm going to call all my MLS guys up to the national team. It would be a shit show. So did I want them to lose against Japan? I don't know. I kind of wanted them to win, to be honest, Ben, because of all the smearing that had been going against Pochettino. The fan base has fallen for it. All the superficial stuff. They can't see very far into the future. They don't understand what a practitioner might be trying to do like Pochettino. Pochettino is desperate. I'm telling you right now, desperate, because the player pool is shit. It's shit. You think Gio Reyna is some global superstar, some amazing guy who should be a starter at the World Cup? He's 21 years old. Or you think that, who's the outside back at Mönchengladbach again? What's his name? Joe Scally, right? He's amazing. Oh my God, that guy should be starting 11 for sure. People think that, oh, Anthony Robinson is God's gift. They think that all these guys that are quote unquote the guys, the A team, are phenomenal. They're not phenomenal. Literally, Benny, like 2 or 3 months ago, remember when the whole controversy of Christian Pulisic not wanting to come for camp and stuff? Literally back then, everybody was against the players, calling the players soft and calling them pussies and saying, you guys are the worst generation, not the golden generation. That was just a month or two ago. And then Pochettino loses a game or whatever. And no, the A-team guys need to be here. They're the best guys. But what, you just forgot that you called them soft and weak, mentally weak and entitled. And now you're clamoring that Pochettino should be calling the A-list guys. No, Pochettino is desperate. He's like, okay, I understand I have some A-listers. Probably 7, 8 guys are already going to be the starters, Ben, okay, for the World Cup. But he's looking, who are the other 20 guys that I'm going to get on the team? I need to investigate, do a thorough investigation, because the pool is shit. So I'm going to look at MLS guys. I know MLS is trash and shit, even though he said nice things about it, because obviously he's employed by these people. You're not going to be the national team coach and go in there and trash the domestic league and say it's corrupt and say it's a monopoly and it's one of the worst competitive leagues in the world, because there's no competition, really. Over half the teams get into the playoffs. The last place teams don't give a shit if they're last place because there's no relegation. He's not going to say all that stuff. He's going to be nice. But he's not calling these guys out of, I don't know, he's trying to find if there's a jewel, Benny. That's all it is, dude. And so did I want him to win? I think I wanted him to win against Japan to shut these people's mouths. And I know Pochettino knows a lot of football. And I know Pochettino is vastly superior than these MLS monkeys that they would give the job to next. So that's my response.
Yeah. Yeah, Gary, do you think that, like, by the time Pochettino, maybe a month or 2 months into his tenure as a USMNT job, right, he kind of already knew the guys that he was potentially going to, like, maybe at least 15 to 16 of the roster. And the fact that he's calling in all these MLS guys, like you said it, right, he's employed by these guys. So we don't know if there's some type of contractual obligation to bring in MLS guys, but also he doesn't want to, like, offend or upset the people that he's working for. So calling these MLS guys in, do you think that's just to say that he did it? It's like, hey, look, I gave these guys a chance and they weren't what I was looking for.
the people like to say, oh, conspiracy theory, and that Jurgen Klinsmann, you know, when Jurgen Klinsmann said, you know, in the book that there's an MLS quota for the national team, that a certain number of players need to be called and from different franchises and all that stuff. I don't think it's contractual in any way, but there's just a natural incentive to do that. There are just natural pressures to do that. And where else are you going to get your players from? So we have whatever the number is overseas. We have a certain group of players overseas. Great. Those are very well-known entities at this point because they have been the elevated ones, the chosen ones by the previous regime. And that's why they got their opportunities in Europe, many of them, or they got further elevated. Those are known entities. Pochettino knows these players. He even coached Christian Pulisic while at Chelsea. He's aware of the capabilities of all those guys. So are you just supposed to call those guys and nobody else? I think that's a mistake. I think Pochettino had a very, very good point, which he doesn't have to tell me or us because we're aware of it. We've been watching football internationally forever. That the team is already qualified, Benny. The team's already qualified. These aren't must-win games. So if you're already qualified and these aren't must-win games, it's perfect opportunity to find it. Let's see if we got some other diamonds that have not been elevated to the national team. Let's figure this out because I need depth for the World Cup. I may already know what the quote-unquote A team is, but what about all the other guys? What if I get Christian Pulisic? What if Christian Pulisic is injured? You know how Jozy Altidore got injured in the World Cup when it was like Jurgen or something that impacted the team? Okay, who is going to be Christian's backup for real, you know? Or who is going to be Tyler Adams' backup? Or who is going to be all the... He needs to figure that out. Oh, well, Gary, the team needs to gel. You should have the same team playing the games all the time. So by the time they get to the World Cup, they're gelling, right? Guys, they already know each other. They've already been playing with each other forever. They've been the group forever. Yeah. And I don't think they watch much international football, to be honest, and what's happening with other national teams. Legit managers are doing this stuff all the time with other national teams, experimenting, especially after you're already qualified. Messi didn't play against Ecuador yesterday. They lost against Ecuador. Messi didn't play. The team's already qualified. You don't need Messi to play. Why risk Messi? Let me throw in Mastantuono and try to see if he has what it takes. You know, the 18-year-old who just got purchased by Real Madrid. That's what you do.
Yeah, but I think, Gary, other countries can get away with that because their player pool is so deep, right? You can bring in your B team or C team and still have probably players that are playing Premier League or playing first division in Spain. Here, it's like, okay, you bring in a B or C team and, yeah, they're MLS guys that are pretty much not known by anybody. And I think Pochettino is given a task that is almost impossible because think about it. He comes in 2 years before a World Cup, which is not a lot of time to get his team or have looked at the players that he wants to. And I do agree. Like, do the guys know each other? Yeah, they do. But I think it would be beneficial, especially since they're not playing meaningful games right now to where they have to qualify for the World Cup. I think we do need more time together as a group with the main guys, more games, because we're way behind the rest of the world. So any chance that we get, like if Pochettino already knew, all right, these are the 22 guys that I'm taking to the World Cup 2 years ago, and he got them together 2 years ago and they played in competitions together, I think we'd be a little bit better as a group. Like all of the guys digesting exactly what Pochettino wants versus every camp is different. Every camp is a new guy. Because I think it takes time to adjust what Pochettino is asking versus what Berhalter wanted.
So I think, look, I'm not completely discrediting or discounting the point of quote unquote gelling together, right? Getting the same guys always together. There is a point to that, and which is why it's always made. I just think that it is superficial. Is there a benefit to it? Yes, there is. But what if the goal is to win the World Cup? You can't win the World Cup being thin, right? Just having these guys and nobody else gets experience and nobody leading up to the World Cup and nobody else gets a shot, nobody, and you don't identify anybody else. If you just go to the World Cup with what has already been established, well, what's already been established is not good enough. What if the manager's like, that's not good enough for us to get to a semifinal? Not good enough. So if that's the idea, then just getting the same guys doesn't get the job done. So you have to do something radical, Benny. I'm just offering people an alternative viewpoint from a practitioner's perspective again, okay? So you go radical. The other teams are deep, you said, and we're not. The other teams, B players or C players, are better than our B. I reject that. I'll tell you why, because I think the American situation is unique in the sense that, let's say that you're a really good player and you should be an A-lister, but you play in MLS. In MLS, you might look like shit because everybody around you is shit, because the competition is shit, because the opposing team doesn't react the way it should react, like high-level teams react. So you actually don't look that good playing in MLS, but you're a phenomenal player who should be an A-lister. This happens. This happens not only at the professional level, it happens at the youth level too. It happens everywhere. Your environment doesn't let you shine. So a practitioner knows this. So he's going out there with his eye and his assistant's eyes to try to do what we discussed in our last podcast about watching trials and selecting players from trials. So he's out there watching games and he's like trying to see if he can pick out that is a baller right there. But he looks like shit playing for Orlando City. You know what I mean? And so you take him out in that environment. It's like, come here, my friend. You're not appreciated. Let me put you in the national team environment and let's see if you can, where you can actually express your quality. Hence, like the Freeman guy, the right back. If you look at that right back, he did pretty good against Japan. He looked the part and he's only 21 years old, Benny. But you would never know that he is potentially of that caliber, of European quality caliber, if he just stays at Orlando City. So that's one rebuttal. The other rebuttal is that some of these players who might be ballers in MLS, they aren't in Europe because MLS has blocked them and holds them hostage, or offers come in and they reject the offers, or they ask, oh no, you need to pay $12 million for this guy. And that's not realistic. So the deals get torpedoed. So the reason that they are not in Europe or overseas is because they have not been allowed to go, which means that they're good players, Benny, which means this whole notion of the B team is shit and shocking, or B team players are terrible, or C team players, or we don't have depth. I don't buy into that. In other countries, there is more of a meritocracy. So more of them are in Europe. More of them are in the top leagues. More of them are competing at the higher levels. And so we think that they are deeper than we are. But the reality is, if MLS didn't block people, Ben, we would have 3 or 4 times the amount of players that we currently have would be in Europe. This is reality.
Yeah. But I mean, Gary, the fact of the matter is that they do block these players and they are stuck in MLS, right? So they're not used to high level international competition. And even if they do get selected to the USMNT and they do end up getting elevated because of that, maybe making a move to Europe, I mean, it's kind of almost too late, you know, because obviously you don't just make a move overseas to Europe and you're the guy, you're the starter, you have all these matches under your belt. You've seen a lot of MLS players make the move to Europe and they're riding the bench for a year or 2 years, or maybe they never even crack a starting lineup, you know, so it doesn't just happen overnight, right?
Yes, but that's why, so again, I'm taking the other, I'm still manning Pochettino's situation in the sense that you're right, Benny. That's why I need to give these guys as much playing time and experience against international opponents as possible for a whole year, so that when they get to the World Cup, even though they're not, haven't been playing in Europe, they've been exposed to high level competition at the international stage beyond just their MLS stuff. Because imagine if he just takes the A guys, right? Many of them, like you said, don't even get playing time in the European teams. Giovanni Reyna has not played football. Like he got like, I don't even know. Like he wasn't playing for Dortmund for a whole year or year and a half or something. You take that guy to play in the World Cup. Well, the same thing applies. He actually hasn't even played football. Okay, so I we need to use the national team to at least give these guys the experience of playing with the national team and the experience of playing against the South Koreas, the Japans, the Portugal, because I hear now we're going to be playing Portugal, perhaps, is the rumor next, or England, you know, or whoever else, Argentina, or I don't even know who the other friendlies are going to be. And those other international teams are going to be taking it serious, even though it's a friendly, because they're prepping for the World Cup. So they're going to be hardcore matches. Again, I'm steel manning perhaps Pochettino's strategy as a practitioner and what he might be trying to do. I don't know. I just don't think the fan base thinks about these sorts of things.
Yeah, for sure. Let me ask you this, Gary. Do you care about the USMNT? Like, do you hope that they win, or do you want them to be successful at the World Cup? And yeah. It's an obvious question, but are you a fan of the USMNT?
Well, that one's easy to answer. No, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. When you the question of whether I care, that's different as to whether I'm a fan. I do care because it is the largest platform and the coach has the largest microphone of everybody in the American soccer ecosystem. So what he says gets heard and listened by everybody. And so it matters. And that's why I care. One, that we have the right guy with that microphone. Two, I'm always hoping that he says things that educate people more than they currently are, because that also has great consequences. A more educated fan base, a more educated set of operators who are actually run businesses in soccer here, if they're smarter, they can start viewing the system for what it is, the corruption that it is, the monopoly that it is, what holds us back, all that sort of stuff, and start questioning. And eventually, maybe we can have legitimate change. But if it's some peasant, some freaking lackey who has the biggest microphone and just peddling the MLS narrative, we're never going to learn, because you're just getting propaganda. So I absolutely care about the national team in that regard and whether it is successful or unsuccessful. Now that we have Pochettino, who I hold in high regard compared to these MLS wankers, I want him kind of to be successful so that when he speaks in the microphone, people listen and digest it and get programmed with better, more intelligent, deeper narratives, Ben.
Yeah. Has Pochettino met your expectation of what this type of manager should be saying at the microphone? Because we already said it earlier in the episode. You can't come out and say that the domestic league here is shit, or there needs to be promotion relegation, or hey, here's all the problems of the country. He has to kind of be a cheerleader of the league, right? Has he said things where you're like, man, I haven't heard any other USMNT coach say this before?
Yeah, well, just recently after the Korea game, where everybody's like clamoring for him to be fired, or he doesn't know what he's doing, or other, he came out and made some statements to the effect of the fans don't know shit. I mean, he didn't say the fans don't know shit, but he's like, yeah, we're hearing all, you know, everybody's talking bullshit. You know, we'll have to inject the actual quote, but I read between the lines because I know as a practitioner what the political answers actually mean. And I think the fan base is smart enough to actually know as well, which is why they rail against him even harder after he said these sorts of things, right? But he basically called the fan base stupid. He basically said, we know what we're doing. The coaching staff, we all have a vision. We all have a plan. We know what we're doing. All you guys bullshitting out there, shut the fuck up. You have no clue. So, yeah. Yes. Oh,
did you see?
I'll expand. Is he compromised? Absolutely. Will he tell you the whole truth? No. Especially now, he's still fresh. How long has he been in the job? 8 months, 9 months, a year, under a year?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and he's building up to the World Cup. So from that inception point to the World Cup, you play nice. I mean, obviously you have to play nice. Now, after the World Cup, everything's fair game, unless he has in his contract some sort of gag order, which who knows, because MLS is world class at this sort of stuff, right? So I don't know what's in his contract, but just like other people who have left MLS, even recently, you know, James Sams, the player who's now back in Europe at St. Pauli in Germany, and he was playing for New York City FC. He recently just came out and made some statements about, yeah, MLS's level is shocking. Like, it's so bad that that's why I wanted to come over here to actually test myself and actually be in an environment that actually matters, where the games actually matter. So it's when you leave this little bubble that you can actually speak freely to a certain degree, especially if you're like Pochettino. And Pochettino doesn't need MLS, Benny. He doesn't need a job from MLS. He doesn't need a job from US Soccer. He can get a job anywhere in the world and get incredibly well paid and at a higher level. So this is why US Soccer MLS fears getting a foreigner, because they can't control them. So after he's done with the World Cup, I'm actually now hoping that if he's still around beating the coach, I actually hope that they do good, but not too good. I'm thinking maybe quarterfinals would be just the sweet spot. And then he did good as the foreigner. There'll be probably pressure on the establishment to hire another top manager like Pochettino, you feel me? And not some MLS monkey. And then Pochettino can go and talk his shit if he wants to after he's done. That's my fantasy world. That's my ideal world, Ben.
That might be tough, dude. It might not see that. No, I can see the U.S. Even like the round of 16, and the Federation comes out and says, see, we told you, let's bring in one of our own guys. Somebody that truly knows the American player. Somebody that knows the culture, and just then going to end up being another puppet, bro. But, oh, dude, I can't imagine being Pochettino right now, and just the pressure that he must feel, dude, every single game. You know, it's like people are, the things that people come out and say were like, remember when somebody said that Pochettino might go back to Tottenham, or that he's already looking at other options, and they just take any chance that they can get to slander him, bro. It's just wild. And imagine when he gets to the World Cup, if he's not successful, gets the axe, bro, immediately, I think. So it must be tough, dude. Did you see the thing where I think he went to like a college football game in Texas or whatever, and he came out and said, like, I wish that the U.S. soccer fans could have this type of environment, because, dude, it's, you see any college football game and the fans are going wild, bro, and there's actually a culture there and people care about the team and they're going all out, bro, tailgating before the game, and you don't really see that in U.S. soccer, bro.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny.
And the fan... No, it's funny because the fan base and the media Muppets were insulted by that. They were insulted by that, you know, and they should. It's true, though. You're basically telling the existing fan base that you're fucking soft, weak pussy. Like, this is what real fandom looks like. You guys are fucking shocking. That's why they're against him, honestly. And they don't look at themselves in the mirror and say, yeah, we are shocking. We are soft. We do suck. No. Instead, what they say is like, oh, this is evidence that Pochettino doesn't understand American sports and how soccer fits into the sports landscape. That they put it back on him. No, motherfucker. It's because you guys suck. Look, when they played Guatemala or whatever it was in the Gold Cup, filled stadium. And these are people that came here from Guatemala to go to the game. These are Americans, people in America that are Guatemalan Americans that filled up that stadium and went bananas. So the culture is here. It's just the culture that caters to the MLS demographic, the USMNT demographic, the soft, whitewashed, pussified demographic. You're soft. You're not hardcore. That's it. That's all it is, Ben. It's hilarious, dude. I love it. Do you laugh when you read these things?
Oh, dude. That's my nightly entertainment, man.
Hey, tell me, you weren't on X as much as you are now, ever since we really started picking up on the podcast and, you know, talking USMNT and MLS. Like, I think you pay more attention than ever before.
I've always, I would say for the last, I don't know, 5 years. No, I'm always interested to see what you say. And even when we're meeting and, like last night after the game, I saw you like typing out a tweet. I'm like, oh, Incoming fucking Expos coming and see what fucking Jerry has to say right now. But no, ever since we started, yeah, I've tried to have more of my finger on the pulse. Let me ask you this, Gary. Do you think the hiring committee, whoever hired Pochettino within the Federation, do you think they took into consideration that Pochettino hasn't really won like a major title? I know he's won like League One and maybe two other trophies in France, but the fact that he hasn't won a Champions League, you know, he's been to the final, but versus you bring in like a Pep or Klopp, somebody that's won major titles multiple times. Do you think they use that as like a little token to kind of say, hey, look at Pochettino hasn't really won anything major. So if he does fuck up, it's on him. It's not on the US player. It's not on us, right? He doesn't really know what he's doing. Like, you think they have that in their back pocket right now? Because if they were to bring in a Pep where this guy's been successful, he's won, I don't know, 5 Champions League. He comes in and he's not successful with the US. Like, how are people going to say that it's on Pep, you know, versus how easy would it be now to say, oh, look at Pochettino. They brought him in. He's never won anything major, right? You get what I'm saying?
I do. I get it. Perfect. It's a good point. It's an angle I hadn't thought of before, but that's kind of like what politics is. Politics is you can take any event that happens in the real world and spin it with all kinds of narratives and come up with reasons and rationales for why the facts are the facts. That's what politics is. And that's why there's always two sides fighting each other, because you spin it one way and this other person spins it the other way. And that's why I don't like that sort of stuff, because in physics and mathematics and the hardcore sciences, there ain't that kind of bullshitting going on. I mean, there's bullshitting, but not this kind of bullshitting, which is what makes sports attractive to so many people. It's fun. Everybody has their own opinions. Everybody thinks that their own opinions are just as valid as somebody else's opinions, which is why they think that they know just as much as Pochettino or even more. Pochettino doesn't know the player pool. He just hasn't watched enough. But we've been watching our boys play for 6 years now. We know who's who and who's better than who and all this stuff. So that's what makes it engaging for them, because they feel, the common person feels important because they've come up with logic. And since they don't do actual science, they don't understand what falsifiability really means, and they don't understand what logic actually is like, or they don't know what a proof is actually. So they just look at maybe a result or 2 or 5 results, and they think that is proof of something, proof of their narrative. It's like black and white. Pochettino has lost the last 5 games against top 25 opponents listed on the FIFA rankings. So that is proof that he's a moron. You know what I mean? Like, they think they're doing science by doing this.
Oh my God. Gary, the dumbest thing that I see, and I saw it so much, especially after we lost to Korea, bring back BJ Callahan. We need Callahan again. Bro, what are we talking about, bro? That's my prediction, Gary. If Pochettino fails at the World Cup and they sack him, BJ Callahan will be the next coach of the national team again, bro.
I don't even know how to answer. I actually think it might be the Seattle guy, the high school history teacher.
I mean,
it'll be MLS's way of the ultimate send-off, the ultimate quid pro quo, the ultimate thank you for being such a loyal company, slave for us, forever servant to us. Here's your going away gift. You get the national team. Have fun. And it's going to be awesome, because I'm going to see you calling up all the MLS guys and marketing all our franchises and marketing the league and not giving a shit about the World Cup anymore, because the World Cup just finished. So this guy gets hired on after the 2026 World Cup. So he has 4 years, right, until 2030. You can do, you don't have to even perform for the first 2 years. You don't have to do anything. It'll just be a marketing campaign for the league.
Yeah, no, and imagine, Gary, like, right after the World Cup, okay, the next Gold Cup that we play, this guy will win, bro. And then all of a sudden, he's best USMNT coach of all time, and right before another the World
legend.
Cup, yes, right before the World Cup, he retires or something, bro. You know, they won't let him fail, but they're going to schedule 15 games against the most shocking countries, and this there will end 15-0, bro.
Yeah, he'll be a legend because we have so many legends in this country, man. Legends.
Yeah.
Bruce Arena's a legend. Siggy Schmidt is a legend. This Seattle history teacher is a legend. Kobe Jones is a legend. Michael Bradley is a legend. That Frankie Hedrick is a legend. They're all legends. We're a freaking land of legends here.
Yeah, you forgot Clint Dempsey, legend. Tim Howard, legend. So many, bro.
Legends, legends. So I don't want to.
You would think that we've won a World Cup.
No, I don't want to spend too much time here because, again, the fan base, like, oh, well, the definition of a legend, Gary, the person doesn't have to be the best in the world. It's just the best here in our country, of our country, could be a legend. Okay, I buy that. That's fine. But you guys make everybody a legend. There aren't that many legends. A legend to me is if somebody, let's say you're a coach, you're coaching youth. A legend is you use the legend that is this person and what they accomplished as examples, constant examples to the people that you're coaching. You'll say something like, you know, I can't even remember. Nobody uses Michael Bradley in examples when they're coaching kids. You know what I mean? The legend of Michael Bradley. Let me tell you how to be a role model, to be a great player. No kid's going to get inspired by that. Nobody cares. That's not a legend then. There is no legend associated with a human being. Now, if you want to tell me maybe like a Tim Howard, you have a little bit of a case because he did something spectacular against Belgium, right? Where he stopped 30,000 shots. You know, Belgium should have won that game 10-0 in the World Cup. And this guy was outrageous. A once-in-a-lifetime display the guy did. That is legendary. You know what I'm saying? So you can make a case for this guy became a legend as a consequence of that. Or maybe, you know, the whole, because everybody remembers Landon Donovan scoring against Algeria in the very last minute of the game or very last second to actually qualify out of the group stage. That was kind of a legendary moment, you know? But outside of those moments, you did nothing remarkable. I'm not going up to my kids, my players, or even if I'm coaching professionals here in the American environment, if I'm coaching a pro team, I'm not going up to my players and let me say, well, you know what Michael Bradley used to do? You know, he would do this and that and that. This is the role model. He's not a fucking legend. Does any of that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It does. I think if you were like to ask
the legend of, the legend of Sparta. You know what I'm saying? 300 men held up all the Persians, you know, at the gates of Sparta or something. That's legendary. And whoever was the leader is a legend. Or Cleopatra, legend. See, Julius Caesar, legend. Michael Bradley, Kobe Jones, get the fuck out of here. Everybody's a legend. The high school history teacher from fucking Seattle running the Seattle Sounders organization is a legend. Get the fuck out of here.
Somebody was.
There you go. There's a good Instagram reel for you.
I actually posted a reel one time. You were talking about Brian Smeltzer, whatever the fuck it is. Somebody was like so offended. Like, how dare you slander him? Look at how many wins he has with Sounders. Look at how many trophies he has. This guy knows way more football than you. I'm like, come on, bro. Hey, to me, though, you know who's legendary? Suarez in the World Cup, bro. Handball
save.
That's
legend.
That's fucking legendary, bro. All the haters will come out and say, "Yo, Suarez tainted his career." That was shocking, but dude, and you know what? People had the worst reaction. We talked about this many times on the podcast. People had the worst reaction to that, painting him as the devil, basically. Oh, you robbed an entire nation of moving on to the next round of the World Cup. This guy was a hero in his country, bro. He won the game for the team. He played quote unquote dirty. The dark arts of football. Guess what? His team won. I would take that guy on my team any day, bro. Any day.
Legendary. That is legendary. Suarez is a legend.
Yep. 100%. All right, Gary, let me ask you this. We'll do one more question on the USMNT and and see if we can get to one of the member questions as well. Have you seen a difference in style of play from Pochettino to Berhalter? Do you think the team overall is playing better? Do you think, because Berhalter came out in his first press conference, right, and said, hey, we want to play possession, we want to build out of the back, we want to do all these things, but there was glimpses of it, but I don't think under Berhalter we had a true identity, right? Do you think that has shifted a little bit with Pochettino? Do we have a true identity now? Do you notice it in the games, or is it not noticeable yet?
Yeah, I think if there's a distinction that kind of catches my eye, I think that Pochettino is more vertical. It's all about possession still with him. You don't just piss the ball away. You don't do long balls, any of that stuff. But when there seems to be an opening in the opponent, it's more vertical. It's like go and slice and dice them. And I think I saw a lot more of that against actually both Korea and Japan, if I'm being frank. The other thing that I saw in this window against those two opponents that is a vast improvement, I saw more hunger in the players, more desire to win all the 1v1s, and more desire to win, to get results, more intensity than before. And interestingly enough, I think some of that could possibly be attributed to this guy not calling the A-team and giving all these other guys opportunities, because put yourself in the shoes of these other guys. It's a natural incentive. I want to make the World Cup. I am not an A-lister. I am not a lock. I only have one game or 30 minutes or two games or whatever it is to show, please consider me for the World Cup. I will bleed for you, Mauricio. I will die for you, Mauricio. And so I think some of that came out in these past two matches that wasn't really there before. And it came out in the Gold Cup too. Although I just think against Mexico, they were just outclassed and outmatched against Mexico. And against Guatemala, and those dying moments of the game when Guatemala was driving, trying to get the result, I think there was a little bit of timidness from the U.S. But I think some of that is natural, Ben. Just like in American football, I'll say something that's relatable here to the American sports fan. In American football, why does it always seem like there's only 2 minutes left, you know, in the clock, and then you're down, and the team who has possession, it marches down the field like never before. They couldn't do it the whole fucking game. And now all of a sudden, first down, 5-yard progress, all that. They just go, and they get there. They get into the field goal range, or they get to the end zone one way or another, get close to it. And the other team who was defending so well the whole bloody game and didn't let an inch loose, they're falling apart? It's just a classic psychological thing. You're up, you want to defend, and then the other team's all on top of you. But I think this is the other element that people aren't considering. He needs to put pressure on the A-listers, on the guys who are in Europe, that your position may not be safe. It may not be safe. So when I do call you in the next window or whenever, you better give me everything you got, because there's no entitlement here. That's the other plus side to it. Versus if we had just called the A guys the entire time since Mauricio took over, the entitlement would be through the roof. All of them would be comfortable. All of them would know that their place on the World Cup team is secured. And that is not good, Benny. That is not good for your competitive fire. And that means a lot in tournament play. A lot in tournament play to get results is passion-oriented and energy oriented and mentality oriented. It's not necessarily the talent that you've got.
Does Diego Luna make the World Cup roster, Gary? And does Ajimang make the roster?
Look, I've said this before. I think Diego Luna's a decent player, but this is not it. Diego Luna is not it. He does some nice things here. He had a nice little 1-2 pass into the box, which almost led to a goal. That looked very quality, and people are all high about it and stuff. But it's as if folks don't watch international football very much. Like this, that sort of play that Diego Luna did is a dime a dozen all across the world. It's not special. It's not amazing. You just think it's amazing because you don't really see a Weston McKennie do that, or a Tyler Adams do that, where you do a little unlock of the defense because that's not their role. They're bone crunching bruisers in the middle of the field. So they get all excited. Ooh, we got Diego Luna. He's got some sauce, right? Calma, chill out.
Yeah, sausage.
So does he make the World Cup roster? He's probably going to make the World Cup roster. It seems like Pochettino really likes him. If anything, for his mentality more than anything, but he does give you that other little look, just like Jack McGlynn. Jack McGlynn is not the top flight, but he has a special left foot. And sometimes all you need is one special thing to make you an asset to a team. Because in one special moment, the guy might put a filtered ball to Christian Pulisic and it leads to a goal in the World Cup. So maybe you need a goal. Maybe you're behind the scoreline. You throw this guy in there as a Hail Mary. Maybe he does something special. Maybe we have a free kick 20 yards out and he's on the field and maybe he can get us something. So these players might make it. Ben Adjemang, I don't think Adjemang makes it. No.
Yeah, we'll see, dude. All right, Gary, I want to ask you, somebody left a comment. I think it's a really good topic. We might need to dedicate an entire episode to this, but maybe, you know, quickly we can give him some clip notes here. And this is from, this guy always comments, right? I need to send this guy a shirt. I'm not sure if I'd sent it in the other one. Cyber X Shinobi, bro. This guy's always commenting actually questions that are sincere and genuine. So thank you to him. He says, we've discussed player development, but what are the steps for coaching development? How does a coach climb the ladder in the ecosystem? High school, college, professional, etc. Do you need a fake European English / Spanish / Portuguese accent for people to take you serious?
Okay, that's it. There's two things to consider. Two paths, maybe. One path is, I like the title of the book. I forgot who wrote it. I think it might be Cal Newport. Don't hold me to that. The title is Be So Good They Can't Ignore You or something like that. So you have to be so goddamn good at your craft or get so goddamn good at the coaching craft that you can't be ignored because you're going to end up winning like a mother effer. And here in the United States, that is the metric that everybody goes by, unfortunately. So you have to win, and never stop winning. And winning games that you're not supposed to be winning also. So that's one path to climb the ladder because people want winners. And that also means that you might be a good eye for talent because you get the right players on your team. And it might be that you're a good recruiter. Clubs like great recruiters who can bring in talent. It could also be that you're good retention of the talent. You don't always get jacked potentially, so your teams can continue progressing. And it could also be that you're a great trainer. Now, all of these things don't necessarily have to be true because a lot of coaches win, and they're shocking coaches, okay? But the winning is the one that gets you up the ladder potentially to a certain level. And then you're going to find out that there's a glass ceiling on you and you can't break that glass ceiling for all the corruption that we talk about on 343 for years, okay? But let's put that aside for the moment. The other end of the spectrum is play politics. Kiss people's ass, identify who are the powerful people at your youth club or in the network, and suck as much dick as you possibly can with the right people. And eventually somebody might pick you and you're just waiting there until somebody picks you. So schmooze and brown nose and go to this stupid ass U.S. soccer coaching conventions that they do every year in different cities across the country. Buy yourself a plane ticket, spend thousands of dollars, go to the hotel, network your ass off with other coaches, smile, shake hands, say, oh, you're really smart. I really admire you. Oh my God, you're an inspiration. Oh yeah, quick goal, amazing stuff. Let me buy some of your stuff and meet for drinks and do all that shit, which is what most everybody does because they actually aren't good at the craft. So that is what they do. They go out and they network. Go network. And maybe someday somebody will pick you. Now, if you can do both, be incredible at your craft and be this brown-nosing schmoozer networker, okay, that's probably the best of both worlds. But I will tell you something. You're probably not that great at the craft. Because if you're truly amazing at the craft, you're an artist And artists cannot fucking stand politics. They can't stand brown nosing because it is a violation to the human spirit. It is a violation to the universe. You feel it. You feel dirty inside. You want to be out there doing your freaking art. You don't want to be lying, not lying to people's faces, but pretending like you care about some hack right there talking about his methodology. And you're sitting back here looking at this clown talk about methodology or doing his PowerPoint presentation or telling you about how good he is as a coach and he won ECNL and all stuff. And you're like, you don't know shit about football. You as a remarkable practitioner can't tolerate this, Benny. So let's put it all together. Be as good as you can as a craft, be a schmoozer and try to work that angle because that's the best of both worlds. And don't piss off the powerful people. So go be a good little boy, get your little licenses, work your way up to your C license and your B license and your A license, sit in the classroom. When they talk shit about Spain or Pep Guardiola or Rondos aren't gray and aren't directional, you just sit there and nod your head and say, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And when you go out there on the training grounds and you're going to be evaluated because they have you run the session just how they want you to run the session, even though you know it's all fucking shocking, the wrong thing to do. You be a good little boy. Okay, and say, do the right little things and don't be like Gary Kleiban. Don't say retard, you know, on podcasts and stuff like that. Be squeaky clean, well-spoken, always diplomatic. So that is the answer to the question, Benny. That is how you go up the coaching ranks. Was that the question was he asking about coaching development? Because coaching development is different than, you know, a coach who wants to go up the hierarchy, which is what I just finished answering.
Well, he kind of asked bold, so we'll save that one for the next episode. He says, what are the steps for coaching development? And then he says, how does a coach climb the ladder?
We talked about climbing the ladder. We'll do coaching development next time.
Yeah, but Gary, this is why the wrong people in this country get elevated. Like one, there's the brown nosers get elevated too, but also you have shocking coaches that have no idea what they're doing that get blessed with a phenomenal team falling in their lap for whatever reason. They just joined the club and, hey, here's our top team. They win every game, bro. A monkey could coach the game and the team is still going to win. And they have all the success and they're kissing ass. And all of a sudden they slowly but surely, they start climbing the ladder versus actual practitioners that maybe aren't as fortunate or maybe in their community don't have the same quality of players that other cities have, and they're stuck at the bottom, bro. So the wrong people in this country are getting elevated, man.
That's correct. And it's because we don't have a meritocracy. We don't have an open ecosystem. That's right, Ben. Hey, yeah. good episode, man. You extracted I went on for a while there.
Yeah, man. I think it was good. I didn't think we'd talk about the national team so long, but there's so much to talk about, man. So
good. I think it's important for if you're a parent tuning in, because obviously you care about your kids and you're trying to learn as much as you can. I think it's important that you get U.S. men's national team information, analysis, narratives, because it educates you too. You have to know what's happening at the top to also learn how to navigate at the lower levels, at the bottom, and at the youth level. You have to educate yourself. And I think the way to best educate yourself as to what's happening on MLS or the U.S. men's national team is right here, not through those main media channels, because all of that shit is all propaganda. You actually aren't getting the truth, and you can't actually get the truth, because those guys, the reporters, the journalists, the pundits, they actually aren't artists. They aren't practitioners in the space, Benny. They are just talking heads. They actually haven't worked as a coach ever. And if they have, very little. And if they have, they were gifted the job because maybe they were a former player. Oh, former player, you've been a good yes man, company man. Let me give you a USL team, or I'll let you coach a youth national team, or I'll let you coach an MLS team, or be an assistant in that environment, or be a scout. But they didn't earn anything. So they actually don't know what it takes, if any of that makes sense. And if they do learn and they do become an artist and they are very good, when they're talking to the public, they don't tell you the truth, Ben. They just peddle the MLS propaganda because they want to continue being employed or potentially be employed by the monopoly. So if that is your main source of news to quote unquote educate yourself, you're just getting dumber and dumber and dumber. And to the point where they wire your neurons to believe their shit. So when you come here and you get the real stuff, your neurons don't like, it's revolting. They're like, wait a second. I've been indoctrinated for 10 years with what Landon Donovan says, or what Casey Keller says, or Alexi Lala says, or these Muppets masquerading as journalists wrote down or said on their shows and podcasts and stuff. So when you come over here and you're getting a 180 degree different storyline than what they're saying, it's like, wait, this doesn't process. Gary, you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. So if you're a parent, the best thing you can do before it's too late, make sure you get a solid dose of what we're throwing out here, at least to develop some sort of immune system to the propaganda. And if you're a coach, same thing goes for you guys. Same exact thing. It might even be worse for you guys because you're around other coaches who have probably been programmed by the establishment already. So when you're going out and having beers at tournaments or whatever after the game or during practice or whatever, or in board meetings at your youth club, you're getting all kinds of shit that those people were programmed with from the establishment. So you're becoming a mindless robot. Benny, good rants today. Good stuff.
Hey, how do you find time to read all these books, bro? I feel like every time we meet, you're recommending me a different book that has some type of context as to what we're talking about.
Was it the correct title? And is it Cal Newport?
Or no? It was. I looked it up. It was.
No, I don't know, Ben. I've lived longer than you have, you know? So maybe, you know, in 15 years or something, you've accumulated all kinds of books that you've consumed too. I don't know.
Do you still read books like weekly, or is it not as much more that you?
My latest arrival in the mail is this beauty. I can't wait to get cracking on it. So I know the writing is very small. The title is The Art of Doing Science and Engineering by Richard Hamming. Hamming is, I mean, one of the great minds of engineering back in the day. So I can't wait to go through that thing. Oh, do I read? What was your question? Sorry.
No, if you're still like weekly doing that.
Yeah, man. Whenever I can. Unfortunately, most of the time I'm doing audiobooks, but actual physical books, I retain a lot more of the information. But they do take me a long time, Ben, to sit there and actually digest. I don't speed read the thing. I sit there and sometimes I'm repeating. I'm reading the same paragraph or the same chapter over and over again until I actually get it.
All right, dude. I'll try and...
All right, man.
Bring it on that level.
You will, brother. You will. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant, possession-based football, while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.